Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rock On Show with Anna DeVlantis off for another day, broadcast in sense.
I find myself a little taken aback because right now on social media, you are officially old if is a hashtag that's trending.
Okay.
And I swear most of these things I really relate to. You can write in cursive. You're officially old if you can do that.
Well, I'm not particularly good at it, so yeah.
Have they stopped teaching it?
Yeah.
In a lot of places they have.
Don't really teach it everywhere. It's not mandatory.
I mean, nobody uses it.
Well, you do when you write your name or maybe a thank you note. I don't know. You use it for what, Lauren?
Okay, well, I guess I kind of use it. I've kind of created
You got a hybrid?
My handwriting's half normal and half cursive. They just kind of like, you know how slurred speech sounds? That's like if you were to
not familiar.
Create a writing, that would be my writing.
How about this? If the music you like is played in the supermarket, you're officially old. I do find every once in a while there's a song there where I'm just bopping along, so I'm shopping, and I do like it. And, yeah, I remember back in the day, I'd be like, what is this? Scooby-Doo is part of your Saturday morning cartoon rotation.
Yeah.
Guilty.
Yes,
I'm guilty.
Totally. Remember the How about you ever made a mixtape or had a mixtape?
Oh, that's all I did. That was my move.
I'm sure that was
my very
move.
Early
Mr.
move.
Mr. DJ.
Yeah.
I made this
hey,
for
Mr.
you.
Mr. DJ.
Yeah.
And I did that.
And I cross-faded them. That was the thing. That was the extra. That's my special sauce. You know, it wasn't like
the ladies love it.
Where you'd stop the tape and then you put the record, put the needle on the record, and then hit go and play at the same time, whatever it was. You know, everybody else was an amateur at it. I made it sound radio perfect.
That's a pro move right there.
Did you see,
I was thinking about you as I made this mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
Made this one a little extra special for you.
Yeah, but I would deliver it in my satin jacket.
Was it gathered at the waist?
Right, gathered at the waist. Right to their locker.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, just want you to know I made this for you. It's completely crossfaded.
Oh,
I know you don't know what that means, but I'll tell you something right now, young lady. And I actually would do some of this stuff on the tape. I'd actually talk. I might have to find one of those things.
I would, yeah. Did that creep anyone out?
No, it didn't at all. But your kiss is on my list.
Nailed it.
I hit the post right there. Even though I'm still talking over, I really like you. I saw you first in algebra.
I hope you didn't do that.
I love your braces.
But remember you used to write out the name of each song and the artist?
In the smallest little box.
Yes, in the tiniest little line.
Yeah, those were way too small.
I can't believe you, Lauren, at your age, did these mixtapes.
I remember having a 101 Dalmatians tape player with headphones, and I would listen to my recordings.
We would have the tape in the little DJ thing we had, a recorder, and we would hear the DJ doing what Roe does, set up a song. You're like, this is the song we love.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to.
And
like,
then you have to time it. You hit record,
perfect.
But then if you played it back, it was always kind of the radio ad, so the back end had the DJ talking, and the front end had the lead to hit the post. But you'd be like, wait for it. This is the song. Hit record right now. And then we would roll on it. But that lasted. It was mostly CDs for me. I used to make CD mixtapes all the time.
Yeah, yeah, I moved along to that eventually.
Got this new CD-ROM if you want to check it out.
It's the one, one totally fluid thing. It's the one track. That was the problem, though. With the cassette tape, you could do like where everything was mixed together because you couldn't choose a song. You couldn't, you'd have to through it to get to the next
song.
Uh-huh.
That was the thing.
With the CD, they got real mad if I made a mixtape that was like one flowing thing because it's only one.
Oh, it's just one long
one track.
That's great. It's an hour-long track.
Right.
It's like your own radio show for an hour.
Exactly. And I had a number of women break up with me over that. that and other things.
Well, you'd be like probably fast-forwarding, trying to get to the one part of the song you really want, and then you accidentally hit like the button again, and it actually skips to start all over. I would be furious.
Yes. Oh, God. It was the worst thing ever. The CD almost put me out of the dating game.
But you had special skills for that era. Those are moods.
That's actually true. And I like to set a mood, too. I'd like to remind you of all the things we've done together, like that walk in the zoo, that kiss after French class.
Ew.
Oh, my gosh. But I know one thing. I'll be right here waiting for you, Richard Marx. Hold on. Where the hell is he?
Where'd he go?
Here he goes. Oceans apart, day after day, and I slowly. I just want to let you know I got stoned at a party with him a couple weeks ago.
You told us.
Hope that's cool.
Hope that's cool.
Hey, he wasn't getting stoned, though, because that wasn't cool. It actually threw me out of the party when he saw me. Separate issue. What are you doing? Bike racks, 3:30.
Bike racks? Meet me at the bike racks. Oh. That's a great song.
It is a great song.
It is.
Hold on.
It still is.
All right. Okay. You know what I got to do here? I got to... I forgot we were on CLTV. That's bad. Something bad's gonna happen out of that. All right, let's check in with Ben Bradley, who's on WGN TV. I want to see if there's an update to the story yesterday about the Cicero police putting a guy in jail for serving a warrant to the mayor of Cicero.
Quite the story, and
yes.
I've seen several aggregate news sites pick it up today.
Yes.
That's a big story.
It's kind of a national story now.
Yeah.
About the way things go here in the Chicagoland area.
What's going on?
Yeah. Well, we know.
We know.
All right, we'll get to that in a second. But first, Kim, what's coming up in your news at the bottom of the hour?
Looking for a job? Teaching in Illinois will soon be more lucrative.
Then there's this. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Ben Bradley joins us right now from the WGN-TV newsroom.
What a story.
And it is my favorite Chicago story of a political nature this year. My favorite, of course, is the alligator. But the
such high standards.
Yes, but the political one. This is the best. So in Cicero, Larry Dominick, who's been the mayor for what did you say, 15 years, something like that.
Has it been that long?
Ben, wait, hold on. Oh, wait,
can't
I
hear
I
Ben.
Got a
He's
There's a problem.
Flapping
here.
His lips, but we can't see.
Yeah,
hear what here. He has to say.
Now 15 years. Yeah, 15 years.
There we go.
First, can I start by for our CLTV audience? I'd like to congratulate you because rarely does one of my stories inspire fashion. But I see you were wearing your full tracksuit today, well, right out of Cicero.
I wore this in honor of Larry Dominick because it's soft clothing, and this is what you do: you stand around. Before you walk into City Hall, you got to wear a full. It's like The Sopranos; you got to wear a full tracksuit.
So they know you're one of the guys that you can identify.
And for your formal occasions, it's got to be matching top and bottom
with some jewelry exposed.
Go on. I'm
just
sorry.
I knew you were going
to
bring that up, and I was going to borrow a gold chain to
Rose,
wear with this.
You're
today.
Very proud of this. This looks like your cool new tracksuit. So
I
don't
like
make
my,
fun.
It's just a jacket. Mm. I'm going to the Sox game. It's black and white, and I thought I'd wear it.
Okay.
I got a T-shirt under it, and I didn't want to be underdressed for CLTV. Anyway. So here's the deal.
Sorry,
I want to play this because this is amazing. Mm-hmm. This is just audio for the CLTV viewer. This is not you're not going to be able to see the video of this, but you actually confronted Larry Dominick about this for your story.
Yes,
we didn't play this yesterday because we were still teasing the story. But this is some of my favorite Chicago politics. By the way, I cannot drive through Cicero now. Thank you, Ben. We have to get off at First
that
Avenue.
That makes two of us.
Right.
Let's reroute through Berwyn.
I don't know if you want to do that either. I'm going to go through Maywood. Anyway, here is Ben confronting the town president. And remember, he's the president. Hail to the chief of Cicero.
Why did he go to the wrong house and take a package? You see it all the time on the news. People are stealing packages. Just because he's a process server don't mean he's above the law.
Hey, you guys really take package theft seriously in Cicero.
We take everything serious. That's why our crime is so low lately.
I'll bet.
Oh, geez. Crime is low on the streets. Yeah. I think we should check out government.
Yeah, that's why the crime is so low. That's why our crime is so low. He sounds a little like our bookie guy that we have on the show.
Vic? Yeah. A little like Vic.
Yeah. All right, so wait, there's more.
You're honestly telling me 7 cops arresting a process server trying to serve the town president. No coincidence there?
None.
Your cops supposedly told him that the town president can't be served.
That's not true. That's not true at all. Everyone knows I could be served.
You play no role
the last
in
time.
Mike Madigan's machine.
No, he's much more powerful than me. So
that's true.
What do I have to do? He's a friend of mine, but I had nothing to do with Mike Madigan's machine. All he had to do is come to my house. I sit on the porch every night and smoke a cigar. So if he came to the right house, he would have got me.
Right. Arguing that everything's super by the book in Cicero, just as we all expected.
Yeah. Right. And this guy didn't actually steal a package, right?
Not according to the courts, which found him not guilty of package theft. But that was what they charged him with after they pulled him over a day or so after he began trying to serve Larry Dominick with a subpoena to testify in a case against Mike Madigan.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
That is my favorite line, though. Just because he's a process server don't mean he's above the law. Didn't this whole thing start because the seven officers were telling the process server that they can't serve the town president because he's above the law?
Yeah.
You can't make it up.
And God loves social media, but this, you know, the social media response to this story has been incredible. Clearly, a lot of folks in Cicero and surrounding communities, you know, have been posting things, most of which I cannot say on the air. But other people have been sending me photos of Larry Dominick with other people, like Ed Verdoliak, Ed Burke, Mike Madigan. And in all of the photos, he's dressed in the same, like, Hawaiian shirt. You know?
I got to get him a tracksuit. I got to get him into the full Adidas tracksuit.
But I love that viewers see the story and they're like, hey, I'm going to help you investigate. Here's a picture of him with this guy. And here's a picture of him with this guy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, you know he's politically connected.
Yeah.
Hey, can we talk about the other great story today?
Yeah.
Joe Walsh, the former state rep from the Northwest suburbs, now contemplating running for president against Donald Trump in the Republican primary. So that led our crack team here in the WGN newsroom to review some of Joe Walsh's best tweets. And by best, I mean worst.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the one where he called Tammy Duckworth not a true war hero because he said real heroes don't talk about it, even though Joe Walsh did not serve.
Mm-hmm.
There was the tweet where he said, I have a right to say blacks are lazy and Irish are drunks. Hate speech is protected. And then there was my personal favorite. Who can forget this gem from New Year's Eve 2016? December 31st, 2016, yeah. Joe Walsh tweets, Obama is a Muslim. Happy New Year.
But isn't he arguing that the reason he's running is because the president is divisive in his speech? Isn't that one of the major things?
He said he can't sit on the sidelines any longer because President Trump has so undermined the credibility of the presidency. Now, Joe, I've covered Joe Walsh for years, and it's been fascinating. You know, he came in the Tea Party Revolution.
He's a total huckster. Show host, huckster.
Yes.
Because I know talk show host hucksters.
Mm. Do they wear tracksuits?
They do.
Okay.
I'm looking at one right now in my mirror.
But
yes.
But now, then he became a never-Trumper, and he's in the camp with Scaramucci now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this gives him some sort of national. You know, the guy's been
on the cable newsers,
dying to get back, right? And he'll get on cable news doing this. Yeah. That's all he's looking for. Because it's not going to... just on its face, no one can take it seriously based on what you just did, right?
Yeah.
And how does he explain those things? Well, I was just doing that to show the importance of the First Amendment. Speaking of that, how about that Second Amendment? You know, maybe he makes a few bucks, you know, here and there along the way, you know, for his campaign fund or whatever. I don't know.
So many folks just look for oxygen in the 24-hour cable news cycle.
Yeah.
And stuff like this gives them a little life.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I thought we'd heard the last from him. But people do give him, you know, there's certain, you know, folks. And again, this is, you know, The Atlantic this month has a story about, it's funny because Kevin and I were just talking about it. This is a story that I've been wanting to write for 20 years. How really what we have now is a direct result of talk radio from the 80s and 90s.
Without a doubt.
And
you hear it. You hear echoes of what Rush Limbaugh was saying in the 80s,
right.
Which is if you don't agree with them, it's because they're lying to you.
Right.
It's not because you might be wrong.
And they're bad. And they're bad. They're evil. Anybody who disagrees with you is your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are now in American politics. Because it's just, you know, you have an entire generation now who grew up in that. And that's and you know and when Walsh got into this, into the talk radio world, and then the political world, and then the talk radio world again, you know that's what it was all about. So,
once again, we can direct all of the roots of society's ails to talk radio.
Just to radio in general.
Yes,
that's certainly right.
Putting a lot on radio.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
You got it.
Nice meeting him. All right. There he goes. Ben Bradley, WGN Television News. You'll be hearing more from him tonight at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
I got to just tell you, the man, that Larry Dominick story is, you got to go to the WGN website.
Check it out.
Download it. It is amazing.
It is. It's just great journalism, too. It's tracking down leads and where it goes and just exposing so much in the course of following those leads. He did an amazing job. It's totally worth checking out.
And remember, as they say at the beginning of every episode of Cops,
mm-hmm.
everyone here is presumed to be innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Well,
but it's good.
It is good.
All right. Kim Gordon's News brought to you by Midwestern University Multi-Specialty Clinic. How's Greenland look from there? Did you spot a place for us?
I did. I got a fjord set up just for you.
Now, the question is, because, you know, the president would, if he got Greenland, Michael Steele, he'd have to change the flag, right? 51st state, one would imagine.
Well, he wouldn't make it a state. He'd make it a territory.
Oh, they doesn't have to change the flag.
It would be Puerto Rico, but since he wants to swap Greenland for Puerto Rico, it would be an even exchange.
Oh gosh, I can't believe that we're talking about this.
All right, Trixie,
you would go from summers on the beach to winters. Period.
Yes, right. Yeah. Picking up gemstones in the ashen soil. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotta say that. With a week like this, you know, one really does wonder if there are people around him at the White House. I know there's always people who are like, you know, kind of leaking. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Fox News gets, you know, the official statement from the White House, and then they go with it. And then there's people that are, you know, running out on the lawn and telling stuff to the other producers and reporters who are encamped there that get these other things, right? Because they're not just making this stuff up. You get fired for doing that. That's the truth. So your colleagues at NBC and at CNN and all the rest, they're being told, oh, well, the president was floating this thing about Greenland, but he didn't really mean it. And then the next thing you know, he's canceling a visit over it. It makes you wonder if they think he's crazy.
Well, there's more and more evidence to suggest that folks inside the White House, and I put this in the terms that they use, so it's quote, are concerned about his behavior, end quote. And so, there is an increasing sense that there's more going on here than is publicly addressed or being publicly addressed. And I think that this week, look, I just put it, this is where I am. And look, your audience, I think, has kind of gotten the flavor of how I roll at this point. So here's the straight up shot to it. How much more of this crap are you going to take? How much more are you going to put up with? We now have our G7 partners saying, you know what? With Trump in town, we're just not even going to bother putting out a statement. We're just going to go do our thing, and Trump can do whatever he's going to do when he gets to Europe. You've got a pure straight up affront to one of our closest allies. I mean, people don't even appreciate that Denmark is one of the few countries that has been with us from the very beginning of our military engagements in the Middle East. So this is not just some fly by night relationship. It stands up there with Great Britain and Australia in terms of its commitment to supporting the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have then layer on top of that. Now, Jews apparently can't vote their conscience. They have to vote Republican, or more specifically, they have to vote for Trump, or otherwise they're somehow being unfaithful and
disloyal.
And they're stupid. Yeah. They're disloyal and stupid.
I mean, that's the thing. So, let me stop you. I got to stop you.
How much more is she going to take, folks?
Well, that's the, I mean, the word, he really did use the word disloyal. And I know there's a lot of people reading into that more than maybe the president intended. But the point is that this isn't about political loyalty. Faith is not about political loyalty. And that's where governments
and worldview it is.
Well, but
he glums evangelicals and all of that in that same bucket.
Right.
And so the loyalty question is very clear. It was loyalty to Netanyahu as the prime minister of Israel or to Israel itself. It was loyalty to Donald Trump.
Right.
Keep in mind, let's not get it twisted. Everything in the universe focuses around the son. Oh, excuse me, the chosen one. and that is him.
Oh, God. Hey,
his words, not mine, by the way.
I know. We don't need to make up words. He gives us all the best words. I remember that. There's so much to be said about that particular item, but it kind of chills me to my core that we are at a moment where I'm listening to. I was just mentioning a little earlier, just out of a lark, I watched Good Night and Good Luck again last night. That movie's like 16 years old, but it takes place, right? It's about Edward R. Murrow taking on McCarthy and Roy Cohn, who was the Trump's attorney, right? And what they went through and what he went through as a journalist taking them on and how much pressure there was against him to do what it is. It's worth going back and taking a look at that movie again. It's on Netflix because there are so many parallels to what's happening now. It's shocking. And it is when I saw that, I thought to myself when I first saw it in the early 2000s, I thought, wow, what kind of a crazy time was America going through? I'm so glad America's not there anymore. And this is even worse because I got to tell you that Joseph McCarthy was absolutely playing patty cake rhetorically compared to what the president is doing.
Right. And keep in mind, Mr. McCarthy was a member of Congress. He's a United States senator, whereas we're talking about the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Yeah, big difference, right?
Huge difference. If Dwight Eisenhower was engaged in such behavior as president, okay, that escalates this to a whole other level at that time. But here we are now, post-Cold War, post-Iraq War, post-Vietnam, post-World War II, where our relationships and we have, been able to defeat our adversaries in many respects. And you have a president who still looks at the world through that particular lens and how he characterizes some of our partners, most of our partners in the European theater, how he characterizes the relationship between the United States and Israel, and then specifically the whole loyalty piece. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very different environment. And I think Americans have to, despite how fortunate and happy they are that they now bring home an extra $50 a week in their paycheck from that massive tax cut that they receive, the fact that they rest better at night because, there's a Justice Gorsuch and a Justice Kavanaugh on the bench with the promise of at least one more to come, that they have to evaluate whether the price that we're currently paying is worth all of that.
Right.
Because this, to your point, is not about the politics anymore. It's about something that's more important, and that's us. So,
Michael, can I ask you about this idea that the Republicans might mount a challenger, a serious challenger to Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Well, today we have the news that Joe Walsh, the radio host here, is mounting potentially his campaign Monday of next week or something. And I think a lot of people look at that and say, well, very doubtful that he'd be able to get
or
support needed to challenge him. But we have heard this from other Republicans. I mean, the rumors are out there. Scaramucci's going on every show possible saying, hey, we're going to find someone moderate within the party to launch a serious campaign against Donald Trump. Is that going to happen, do you think?
Yes, I think it is. I think that we need to dial back off of our conventional wisdom in this regard, because under a conventional set of facts, the idea of challenging an incumbent president would be silly. The likelihood of it even getting off the ground would not be something that any consultant or media person or campaign manager would really want to waste their reputation. They take the check, but they wouldn't want to waste their reputation in doing that. But this is different. This is an opportunity that's driven not by the conventional thinking, but by a number of other things. One, in starting with the where the president is currently sitting in national polling with the American people. His approval is at the lowest it has been, period, 36%.
Yeah, it'll go down in the next one, too, because of this week was not good. This week makes him look crazy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But will Republicans back? He's still in the 80s with Republicans, though.
Well, it doesn't move. Okay, so let me ask you this. Which is a bigger number, 80% of 10 or 80% of 1,000?
Oh, I was never good at math.
Oh, gee.
Okay, so it's 80% of 1,000, right? Right?
Okay, yes.
But my point is, everyone likes to throw around this number. Oh, it's 80% of Republican base of support. That is a shrinking number, my friend.
Yeah, but he's got to get out of the primary. Who can do this in the primary?
But this is not the point. Okay, so I give you 1980. I give you 1992. Kennedy versus Carter. And Ross Perot versus George Bush. So you can get – it's not a question at this point of getting out of the primary. What Joe Walsh, for example, is talking about and looking at is the idea of actually becoming the nominee. Yeah, that is a quixotic effort. No doubt about it. We know that.
Well, but he's got it. Listen, he's crazier than Trump. We know him. He literally a couple of years ago on New Year's Eve was his tweet was Obama's a Muslim. Happy New Year.
That was it.
He
understood. Got it.
Yeah.
Fight crazy with crazy, baby. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. I almost believe that Trump's running him to keep a legit guy out.
But he's not the only one. Mark Sanford, former governor of South Carolina, former member of Congress, is looking at it. You already got Bill Weld there. Here's the point.
Why can't somebody big do it?
Well, someone big may do it. In fact, the former governor of Ohio, John Kasich, is now revisiting the idea.
Okay.
Why? Because of the first point I made. The numbers for the president are soft. And when I was talking about the 80 versus 800, the fact is that the base of the Republican Party is shrinking. It's not expanding. That number is there are fewer and fewer Americans, A, identifying themselves as Republican, and B, yes, that pool of voters who will go to a primary hall and vote, whether it's a caucus or a polling place, that number is also shrinking. So it opens up the platform for a different conversation that now could see the incumbent being challenged. And the third point is that's been a sort of an okay thing. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're against the idea of having the primary system. But here's where the problem comes for the GOP, and it's the RNC. Because the RNC is now a bought and paid for subsidiary of the Trump campaign. It should not be, because it has to provide resources for those candidates who challenge in a primary as they would for any incumbent in said primary. So that's going to create a real ticklish moment and a potential lawsuit for the RNC if these candidates get in. And when they request certain services and resources that are readily available under the auspices of the RNC to the Trump campaign, and they're denied that, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
So there are levels here that are going to be interesting to watch over the next few.
Let me ask you, Michael Steele, has Anthony Scaramucci reached out to you?
About what?
About this. About coalescing this group of people.
Well, no, not about coalescing this group of people. We have not talked about that, but he and I have talked about the broader concept for some time. Yeah.
Do you believe, we're short on time here, so I'm going to run right with this question. Do you believe that there will be high-profile former members of the Trump cabinet or administration that will come out and criticize him publicly?
No.
And why not?
Well, you know why I say that? Because the ones who've already left have not done so. So why would a current sitting member who's been silent, given everything else that's transpired, suddenly find, you know, their courage stuck.
Safety
to the
in numbers?
Post. What numbers? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know. I just want to throw it out there.
I don't see that.
All right.
I would be surprised if that happened because it has not happened yet. And you have members of the United States Congress who have less at stake in that regard than those members, than those cabinet secretaries do in terms of going back into business and having the president his ire against them.
Yes.
So they haven't said anything.
This is a yes or no question.
Oh,
are you
sure
now or have you ever considered running for president of the United States?
I am not running for president of the United States. No, I'm not running.
That's the correct answer. All right, thank you very much, Michael Steele.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Man of Steel!
Oh, gosh. When is he going to... He's going to one day just say he's not coming on a show anymore. It's crazy intro music.
Probably true. All right, let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's coming up in the news at the top of the hour?
One Democrat's out, but a new Republican is now in the race for president.
That's a Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN Chicago, WGN everywhere, which is everywhere. You can ask your smart speaker to play WGN radio for you. You can ask your phone to play it for you. You can find the app, go to the app store, WGN radio app, and you can go to the web. Just send it to your desktop. Just drop it into your tray.
You can even ask your Uber driver.
Yes, you could. Right.
Great idea. Hey, can you turn it to WGN, please?
Right. Or your
I do that all the time.
Cab driver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully they keep it on.
That's what we like to hear.
Yes.
I want to thank the astute listener, though, who noticed that Jay Inslee, the Washington governor, when bowing out of the race,
yes,
polling at 0.2%, said that we had a good run.
Had a good run.
I picked that just for Kevin.
Yeah.
I love that.
We had a good run.
There we go. There he is.
Next thing you know, he's going to say classic.
Yeah.
Classic presidential race.
Classic dropping out.
Classic Donald Trump.
See, that's someone that's been listening to WGN via app.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
that's
right.
Perfect point.
We had a good run.
Obviously. How would that be in his vernacular? It's so clear.
Oh, man. Lauren, the other night, we were out. She goes, Lauren starts dropping a classic, and we had a good run. She's like, you're rubbing off on me.
I know. Seriously, you have. It's contagious. And obviously, Jay Inslee caught the bug.
We had a good run.
It is addicting. It just becomes part of the normal conversation.
Well, I find it entering my thought after something happens, and I have to say it. Let's just leave that to Kevin to say that. I want to say it. I'm thinking
right,
it. I just, it's Kevin.
Anyway, the problem is when somebody dies, you know, at the age of 90, you get to say that, right?
Yeah.
90 plus. Anything short of that, it's a little. It might be too soon, damn it. But
I'm on Tombstone. Just put, he had a good run. That's all I want.
Now, but here's what I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Jay Inslee, when he said,
we had a good run,
is wrong.
Didn't really.
He did not have a good run.
Right.
That's
why it works, because I kind of do that all the time as well. We were talking about the Titanic the other day. I said, it had a good run.
And you guys were like,
no, it didn't.
No.
There are times you can say that and people go, yeah, I agree. And it's sort of heartwarming. And then there's other times when you say that and you go, wait. You were, first of all, your campaign lasted 3 months. It sucked. He was the one guy with all the crap that's going on in the world. He was like, there's only one thing that counts. Global warming. That's the only thing I want to change.
Right.
Really? That's the only thing you want to change?
That was he was a single issue candidate.
Yeah.
And I guess didn't really resonate.
I understand. People are freaked out about it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. But that's you need an international consensus. And the only way to get an international consensus is to somehow make better relations with your enemies, which I guess the president's kind of trying to do, but also make sure that you hold your allies really close, which the president's not trying to do.
We had a good run.
That's almost like that's a way of looking at the United States right now. Yeah, we had a good run. That's it.
Had a good run as a country.
Yeah. 240-something years. Had a good run. 243 years. Yeah, it was good.
It is a good run.
Yeah, it was a good run.
Classic Democratic candidate.
present governor of Washington. All right. Anyway,
down to 22 Democrats.
Oh, finally! Thank God.
And then there were 22.
Finally, now it's manageable. I mean, there's still Marianne Williamson is still in.
She is
a moron.
Peace and love, Marianne Williamson.
And who else is? You know, I'll tell you the one that is really got to be like trying to figure out what the hell just happened is Kamala Harris.
Well, because of her polls are not, she's not, she's going in the wrong direction, really, isn't she, with the polls lately?
Yeah, from 17 to 5, that's the wrong direction.
Oh, gosh, it's that dramatic.
Yeah.
I didn't see that poll.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's bad.
She had a good run.
The soundbite can't get its own space on the show. Just pointing that out.
You got to beat me to it.
Somebody said it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, Elizabeth Warren seems to be the one that's ticking up. Bernie Sanders, it's about time. Doesn't he need to take a nap at some point?
They say that. Look, there are signs that his fundraising is doing better than most of the candidates, and that he don't count him out, kind of thing. That he's got very engaged base.
Stoners.
And donors, right.
Stoners and donors.
Stoner
donors.
As well.
Yeah.
I think they
that's
mentioned
basically it. Where it comes into play here. Because there's really nothing else that goes on that makes any kind of sense.
But Tom Steyer may still make the stage. He's on the bubble for making the stage for September 12th.
All right. First of all, who could take that guy seriously? He's bought his way into this thing. I know.
Is there irony in that?
I know. But who can buy his? I mean, and he's all he's done is trolled the president and bought his way in. What chance does he have? I know it sounds stupid when I said it.
Okay, well, I think one of the reasons Elizabeth Warren is moving up is because she is talking issues and she isn't just the anti-Trump character. I think Tom Steyer has really the narrative about him is I'm anti-Trump. I'm not him.
Yeah, the voters are going to want some sort of meat on the bone. I have to say, though, I am less bullish now on the president because he does seem. Like 2 weeks ago, I would have said, "Yeah, I think he's got a very good chance of winning re-election." I think I did say that, but last, like especially week, I think there's a lot of regular Republicans that are turning around and going, "I don't know, man. If the Democrats run." I think there are a lot of regular Republicans who would actually look for an alternative. The fallacy of the alternative, though, is this: that in primary voters tend to be single issue voters, and Trump has created his own single issue voter. He's created his Trump brand voter. People who just want to vote for him, not because it's about guns or about abortion or about any of the other single issue things. He's got that pull. He's got the ability to pull people out just to vote for him because he encompasses those things. That's why he's so careful about changing any of the gun laws because he doesn't want to lose those people. He doesn't. And for some reason, he's seen as like an evangelical, also single issue voters.
They're loyal to him.
Yeah, which is absolutely astounding. Completely astounding. Which tells you that the evangelical political movement, not the religious movement, the political movement may not be about faith and charity and chastity and all the things that evangelicals kind of stand for. Because the president isn't about faith or charity for that matter. Because his own charity was just to benefit his own, you know, pay off his own legal bills. And chastity, I got nothing to say about that, but I'm just saying, that ain't happening. So this for 100 years, this particular presidency, whether it lasts 4 or 8 years, it's a turning point in American history and will be forever studied because it totally changed the rule book. The question is, for those of us who would like to see the rules back in play, can it be done? I don't know. I'm not 100% sure about that. But I will say that he, this week, between the Israel thing and the Greenland thing, it's got me. And then asking Putin to get back into the G8, that's weird to me, too. Because if you know the story behind that, that doesn't make any sense.
A lot of time to the election, though. A lot of time.
Oh, for sure.
So,
but not that much time to the primary. You know, and they if they do run somebody, it'll be interesting to see if he starts to feel weakened by it. I'm telling you, we just talked about this during the break. Let me just tell you without hesitation, I tell you this, that if Nikki Haley were to announce that she is running, he could try to beat her up, but that would be, you know, because he could beat up anybody that comes up against him. That's going to be, it's going to divide him further and further and further from women who some are just still holding on, you know, lightly to the idea of him. I think that's going to be a problem. And she has the resume and she's got the stump capabilities to really be something. And they'll fundraise for her like there's no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll draw suburban women who are not sure that they want to vote for a Democrat.
There's no sign that she is going to run. In fact, her recent tweet was about support for Mike Pence, saying enough with the false rumors. He's a dear friend for years, and he has my complete support. Because all of the rumors were out there that he's going to trade, the president's going to trade him, obviously dump Pence and pick her. She's sort of trying to shoot that down.
She goes down in history, though. If she does this, she has a different place in history. And she just stays with the issues, and she talks about international, and she talks about domestic stuff, and what are we going to do about the debt and deficit? Goes back to sort of core Republican talking points and ignores the president. I cannot imagine how powerful that will be if she does that, but we'll see.
We will,
and then he will seem wackier by violently attacking her because that's what he does. Right? He's a human fever. Is what he is. He looks like a fever. If you had to draw a fever, you know, for a Pixar movie, that's what it would look like. He's an immune response. He's got like this incredible response. All right, let's do this. Let's stop right now what we're doing and move along to Kim's news, find out what's happening there. And then when we come back, why the new chicken sandwich is an economic indicator.
Ro, if you think you spend more and more time in traffic, you're right. We'll have the results of a new study coming up.
This week on Chicago's Best, from bold burgers to sweet treats, the CB team is checking out Chicago's best kid-friendly spots. It's Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Ro Concho with Anna DeVlantis, 720 WGN Chicago. All right, hey, this is interesting.
Yeah.
This story in Bloomberg about, you know, everybody's talking about the new Popeye's chicken sandwich.
That it's like the best ever?
Yeah. Our own Brian Altimer went and had it. He's like, oh, that wasn't so great.
No?
Right? What would you say?
What would you say, Brian?
It's just a regular sandwich. That's all it is.
Regular sandwich.
Regular
there you
sandwich
go.
With a great marketing
team.
No big
deal.
I was going to say, it does look really good.
In the picture.
I've always been a Popeye's guy. I haven't tried the sandwich yet, though.
When it came to fried chicken, there was only the in-store fried chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Browns was the best.
Yes,
Browns was the goat growing up for sure.
Yeah. Without question,
great coleslaw.
No, right,
great biscuits.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
When my mom walked home from work and she had bags of Browns chicken, the house erupted.
Crinkle fries,
loved it.
And the barbecue sauce alone is so good.
Yeah.
Gosh, no, wow, you're right. Everything is so good.
There's
there.
Still one by me. I should hit that up soon.
Yep. The don't say it like that. I don't know. It's the Portillo's related, right? The brothers, right? They had the Frank Portillo's brother was the Browns guy.
Yeah.
And I know that Portillo's, they have ribs. They don't have, do they have fried chicken? They
I
should
don't
do
know.
A fried chicken. I'm telling you right
no,
now.
No, they don't have fried chicken.
They should get on that. Now, the but in terms of the other like national brands, as crazy as it is, I never quite. All the rest of them didn't really stack up to me to Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't know.
So, yeah, really?
I was team Popeyes, but
Popeyes all right.
Popeyes was crunchier, and then they went spicier, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. A little more kick to them.
Yeah.
You can always heat that up, though. You can always make that
a little
up.
Hot sauce.
You got to pour hot sauce, then you make it soggier.
Yeah. Well, listen, the stuff is already kind of greasy. Now, back in Chicago, Harold's is good. It's fine.
Oh, man, I love
Harold's. Depends on the Harold's that you go to. Not all Harold's locations are created equal.
They pull the food truck up right outside our work here. And it's always great out of the food truck.
You're just telling us now?
Well, you walk right past it.
Isn't fried chicken the best thing ever?
It's awesome. Oh, my God.
It really is. I don't know. I don't know
whether
why.
It's wings or yeah. just the full bone.
Yeah, but either the full chicken.
Yeah.
Anyway, the somehow this is related to the economy. I don't remember the rest of it now.
What do you mean you don't remember it? That was a lot of buildup.
People are just going nuts over this Chick-fil-A Popeyes.
Well,
debate.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean the thing is, basically what this says is that when fast food starts to see upticks, that's a little bit of a canary in the coal mine about the economy.
Oh.
Right? So items, and depends on, and also what the pricing of the items are. For example, at $3.99, this Chick-fil-A sandwich depends if... If you see that thing move up or move down in price, mm-hmm. it's a little bit of an indicator. And the Popeyes sandwich, though, they moved the item down to $3.99 because they want to get out of the way of the they want to keep you off the Popeyes. That's what the Chick-fil-A is trying to do.
Oh, okay. Keep their prices a little lower to pull you over there.
Mm-hmm.
Chick-fil-A, great service. Nicest people ever work at Chick-fil-A.
Right, but like what happens on Sunday when you really need it?
I know, you're hungover.
Right.
Gotta go to Popeyes.
I'm trying to see if they can, take in a Jewish partner. That's what I'd like to do. Donald Trump suggested that.
Then they'll be closed on Saturday,
well,
too.
Well, no, then they could do the Saturday. They could do it. Each could take one side.
There you go.
Right?
Depending on the location, you kind of make it work where everybody's got an opportunity.
Chick-fil-A and Goldstein is what it should be called. and so then Saturdays you're good, and then Sundays you're open.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's Goldstein's day.
Please,
he's
everybody.
He's got it worked out.
It's Goldstein's day. Goldstein, you're on it.
Yeah. It's your day.
Then we have a kosher issue.
Oh, boy. We just can't win
we
here.
We can figure it out.
Listen, you get a reform guy to do it. It's good. Goldstein's reform. He's fine. Doesn't have to keep kosher. Just has to open on Sunday. That's all. I'm trying to work it out. Listen, this is modern America now. This is Trump's America. I gotta find an answer. You always gotta find something, no matter how offensive it might be.
And then you're disloyal if you go to Popeyes.
Right, exactly.
Texter remembers Chicken Unlimited, and I totally remember that. Do you remember that? Chicken Unlimited.
Oh, I don't remember them.
That was a place? Yeah. It was like, it was maybe even a precursor to Browns, like right before Browns. Or Browns started to really expand.
Oh, the Browns breaded mushrooms, as a listener text in. So good.
I'm telling you, I think they could relaunch Browns. I think the time has passed. I think it's time
to
do it.
Do people even remember
why?
No,
remember what?
Why
would you even talk about it?
I'm not going to. I'm just saying that it's the reasons why it kind of lost favor.
Yeah.
Not because of the food. The food's always been amazing.
Lauren's right in the age group where, do you remember, do you know why Browns is out of favor?
No, I mean, I've seen it. Perfect. Don't mention it.
All right, that's it.
I do, but I won't tell her.
Yeah. All right.
I just like to eat the food. I don't need to ask anything about the establishment.
No,
you don't.
No, it had nothing to do with them either. They just had there was a very violent crime that happened to one of the Browns, and because everybody kept calling it the Browns Chicken Massacre, right? And so therefore,
you just talked about it, bro.
Trying
to explain it to the kids. The one by me.
I'm just saying that the chicken, you got to go back. Just Brown should, you know. I don't know. We gotta relaunch it. We gotta get the original recipes and the whole thing. I'm telling you, it would be the hit of all hits. Telling you right now.
I like it.
All right. We've got Kim Gordon's news, which will not include any of that, or Chick-fil-A and Goldstein. None of that is going to happen. But that's coming away in 2 minutes. And then on the other side, this story that we've been talking about, the traffic, and the new study that says there is no rush hour anymore. It's all rush hour. Coming up after 6 o'clock, your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Hawks. Take the Oilers on Monday, October 14th. Blackhawks single game tickets are on sale right now. I know there's over 20 game day giveaways, 5 2010 anniversary celebration nights, 3 alternate jersey nights, retro hat series, community nights, theme ticket offers. Just go to the website, blackhawks.com, for all your information.
Bro, can I just say something real quick before you get to the guest?
Oh, no.
I'm so happy you're doing this conversation because I've been driving downtown from the northwest suburbs every day now for the last 6-7 years. Every day.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
By far, this has been the worst summer for traffic I've ever experienced. It has been absolutely horrendous. Everywhere I go, and it doesn't matter what time I'm driving, I leave a Sox game at 11 o'clock at night. Oh, I'm going to fly home. Nobody's going to be on the road. Nope. Moving road work. Just the worst traffic I've ever experienced driving to the city. That's all I have to say.
Right. Study backs you up.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. I'm glad. Thank you for the preamble. Bill Eisley is joining us. He is a PhD. He's Dr. Bill Eisley, mobility practice leader and senior research engineer at Texas A&M.
Hey, Ro. Thanks for the opportunity.
Bill, thank you for doing this. We really appreciate it. So you did this national study, right, of traffic pattern changes. And I like your conclusion here, which is rush hour is an out-of-date term, right?
We can no longer use that term. Kevin, you're absolutely right. You were stuck in traffic, and it wasn't during the peak period. You would think overnight or during the midday we might be able to escape it, but we can't anymore.
Is it because there's too many cars on the road? Is it because, as Kevin's pointing out, there's a lot of infrastructure that's going on around the country that's creating these problems, not enough new roads? What is it? What are your conclusions?
It's a little bit of everything, quite honestly, Ro. So the bottom line is this: there's just too much demand out there for the supply that we have. What's causing the congestion? Any number of things. As Kevin pointed out, when we're trying to fix things, there's actually some congestion caused due to construction, weather events, of course, incidents, crashes, and then just plain too much traffic.
Too many vehicles.
You showed there's something in the study that talked about how more people working also contributes to more people on the roads commuting to their jobs.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword, but yeah, Anna, the more prosperous your community, and Chicago is a place to go, it's lots of jobs there, and it's a fun place to vacation, too. So people are there. The more people that you have and the more economic vitality, the more people will want to be there. So the congestion goes up, unfortunately.
So you have a number in here that Chicago, the average commuter loses $1,300 a year to congestion. What goes into that $1,300?
Wasted time and fuel. So we put an expense on the hour of both commercial vehicles, trucks, and then also the passenger cars that are running around in the community during congestion. And then, so that's the waste of time, and then also the wasted fuel that's burned up during the congested periods.
Are there any solutions here?
There's a number of solutions. You know, first and foremost, we talk about trying to get as most efficiency out of the system as possible, clearing crashes as quickly as possible, making sure our signals are timed. But there's other things that we all can do, and that is, when we can, work with our employers to try to look for flex timing opportunities, ability to telecommute, or contemplate, do I really need to drive in every day, or can I shift my trip?
The one thing I want to ask you about in terms of trends, because I've heard a lot of different things about this, and I'm interested to get your take, is the ride sharing, the rise of the ride share vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons this was pitched and was so beloved in the beginning is because it's going to eliminate the need for five people to have a car, because there's one vehicle that will serve all 5, 10, 15 people throughout the day. And it feels in Chicago as if you've got a lot of Uber and Lyft driving around with one person in the car. I don't know that that really solves the problem, and potentially just, you know, sort of creates more traffic, potentially.
Yeah, that's the discussion point. And quite frankly, Anna, we don't have the data to be able to peel away the layers of that onion to look at, you know, how much is being contributed to that.
It's interesting. You think about it.
You know,
some people take the Uber to get around the public transportation if you're running late, or if the number is low enough that it's only a little bit more than paying for the CTA or something.
Anecdotally, I would throw in that one of the issues that I see with Uber and Lyft drivers, because often they're the same, right? Mm-hmm. They have both services.
They work for
is
both.
Their phone mapping sends them in the wrong directions. They get lost. Like down in Chicago,
so
because you got upper and lower streets in Chicago,
true.
And there's all kinds of things that...
Little tricks, you got
to
know.
Yeah, you have to be a local, and I see a ton of Indiana plates, Iowa plates. I've seen Ohio plates with Uber here, Wisconsin plates with Uber. People are coming down just to take advantage, especially in the hot weekends like Lollapalooza and things like that.
That's true.
They figure they're going to come down here, they're going to make, you know, a couple $100,000 bucks or whatever, and then go back home, which they can do. It was surge pricing, especially, and it adds to the number of cars on the road and the confusion on the road, because they have no idea where they're going. You see a lot of, I'm in the left lane, I gotta cross over two lanes to get to the right lane.
they're so reliant on those GPS, it'll take them anywhere, you know, even if it doesn't make sense logically in the city.
All right, so at the end of this, though, I mean, it's an interesting problem, and what you guys do, and Texas A&M is one of the best in the world at figuring this out. You know, you've got Northwestern and Texas A&M are very good with the traffic management stuff. I wonder, would you, obviously more roads, more road building, that's good for the economy, and that's, you know, we're probably going to be needing those things on some level. There's going to be autonomous driving with trucks. I don't know about cars anytime soon, because that's a consumer issue. But there, you know, I mean, I think we're 5 years away from autonomous trucks, aren't we?
I think we're at least 5 years away for some of those automated technologies, and quite frankly, the jury's out in terms of what they'll mean for safety and congestion. You know, some would say, gee, there's going to be this opportunity that it will be more efficient, and it certainly will. It'll be more safe. But at the same time, we might be opening up markets to people who've never been able to drive before. And so perhaps there's more traffic on the road. So I think the jury's still out on that. As far as the technology moving into implementation, I think we'll see it more in freight and shipping, and perhaps in, you know, local last mile shipments first as a test before things get expanded.
Yeah. Last mile's got to be humans, though, right? Because they're the ones that have to load and offload the stuff.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a good clarification. And by last mile, I mean kind of getting from the main interstate, those connectors in to get door-to-door with deliveries, because, you know, let's face it, e-commerce is taking off. Any of us who buy anything, we're the cause of some of those trucks that are out there on the system, and so making those deliveries and managing the curbs in downtown gets very tricky.
You know, you said something, Bill, I want to just address this before we go, about getting accidents off the road quickly, which is really, you know, clearing
big
that
issue.
Really, really an important thing. You always wonder about that, and there's people standing around taking pictures. And I know that they're, especially if civilians get into an accident, before they call police, they're taking pictures, and they don't move their car, because they figure if they move their car somehow, that's going to change the insurance outcome. It's not. I just promise you, it's not. Get out of the way. Right?
Exactly.
Right. Well, they're going to say I did this. No, they're not. No one cares. Your insurance company fights with them. They'll figure it out. But in Chicago, you know, one of the issues we have on the interstate system now in Chicago, and this is something that we should not mention for tourism purposes, but, you know, you get, like, on the weekends, you get shootings. And then they got to close everything down because they got to pick up bullet casings.
Off of the expensive.
And it takes hours upon hours upon hours. And it's like, I can't believe that I'm saying this with the amount of flippancy. It sounds like I'm saying it, but that has become a very significant issue in traffic management here. It's stupid.
Yeah,
I mean, it's crazy. I know it is. It's a wow factor here for sure. But it happens with such regularity because guys figure that if they get on the expressway and shoot at their enemies, they're not going to get caught. Like if you're on a surface street, you might get caught, but on the expressway, you just keep going, right? And then all the traffic's going to get stopped. That's crazy.
Well, one thing we can do, and I would give credit to the Illinois Department of Transportation and also those that manage the highways and their partnering agencies there in Chicago, is the intelligent transportation infrastructure, being able to see with the cameras when there's incidents out there. And that's the first and best way to, hey, there's something going on there. Let's get that cleared as quickly as possible and get the road back opened up.
I noticed they're also doing that with mobile devices now. They have these, they like almost like a little trailer that they pull up. They've got cameras that go up in a mast by 30 feet or something, and they're able to see. It's really, that technology is super cool. And of course, now GPS, right? The GPSs are talking to each other, and you've got real time. I mean, there has never been traffic reports that are more accurate now, whether it's on the radio traffic reports using the same technology that your car is using when they can see, you know, when you see the red lines in your car, if you're using that, or Waze or whatever it happens to be. I mean, it is very, very, very accurate. There was a day, I'm not even this old, Bill, so just let's make ourselves feel better. But there was a day that there were people when the traffic reports were being done from the top of the Hancock building here by using binoculars. There were people literally using binoculars looking at the expressway.
Imagine.
Yeah. So thank God those days are over. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, they don't make strong enough binoculars to reach out to those cues from the Hancock building anymore.
That's really true. All right. Bill, thanks very much. Appreciate
it.
Great study. Thank you. Bill Isley, Dr. Bill Isley from Texas A&M, Giga Aggies. Giga'em Aggies? Is that
no,
what
it's is? It's Hook'em Horn. No, that's UT.
No, it's Giga'em Aggies.
Giga'em Aggies.
Yeah.
Is that how does Giga'em. That not sound right? Get'em or Giga'em?
Giga'em.
Giga'em.
Mm-hmm.
What's Giga'em?
That's stab them in the right in the center with you know and pick them up. Giga'em.
Oh, that's the hand sign they use.
No, it's like stabbing them. Yeah.
God, that's horrible.
Get Bill Isley. Get Bill on the phone. What? We can get that back. Yeah. No, that's like yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Giga'em. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. How about that?
You know, like you're out there gigging frogs. You just get, you know, what you do to get that. Oh, you put a knife on a stick, and then you tie it up really good there with the duct tape, and then you just poke that frog right in the back, peel him up, and then good eating.
Oh, it's very violent sounding though.
Isn't that what that means?
I think it is.
Yeah, because they want to gig the frogs, the horn frogs. So that takes that takes tick.
Texas Christian.
Christian, I mean.
TCU.
And then Texas Tech is the Red Raiders.
You're right. It's a term that comes from frog hunting.
Yep. Got gig'em. Right there. Good eating.
College football.
So much to learn.
I know. That's what we learn. You learn everything I know I have learned from college football.
The traditions, the mascots.
Right.
The
I mean, I love them. There's nothing better. That stupid Capital
too.
One commercial where the mascots are, you know, moving people out of a house or into a house or whatever it is. My favorite commercial on television. Because I want to name all the mascots. When you see the mascots, you just want to name them. You want to go, oh, yeah, that's the guy. And if you know the college generally, but then if you know the mascot name, then you're really somewhere.
Is that because you had a college without a mascot that you're really good at that?
Go Big Red.
Yeah, yes, maybe that's it. Because thank you for reminding me of that. Because
sorry.
I spent a lot of time watching college football on Saturdays.
Yeah, I do too.
I just a lot of couch time.
It's back this week.
No way! Is it this weekend?
Saturday.
No. Got a couple games.
It's here already.
Yeah.
Giga Maggies.
Hook'em Horns.
And then there's
and Hook'em
Horns, yeah. Hook'em Horns.
I know that one.
Hook'em, y'all.
those Texas football fans,
they're
man.
Nuts.
Oh, they're my God.
Rabid.
Yeah, it's something. All right. That, I don't know how we got there from there, but anyway. Let's check in with Kim. What's going on in the news at the top of the hour?
We have some good news when it comes to employment numbers in Illinois.
Yeah, it is the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Sure is.
It's the 5 o'clock hour. You know what's going to happen there.
We do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, coming up after 6 o'clock, I must remind you that I have tickets for the Blackhawks against the Oilers on Monday, October 14th. I know what you're saying. Ro, summer's not over. Why you give me Blackhawks tickets? Because I can. Because you want them. They are going to be hot as hell this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things you need to know about WGN sports teams. Northwestern football, top 25 ranked.
Go Cats.
There was one vote on the AP coaches poll that they are going to win the entire Big Ten this year.
Ooh.
I know.
I like the way that sounds.
I mean, it depends on, you know, the quarterback situation. To see what, you know, who emerges.
And, yeah, I mean, we're turning a page here in sports because you're right. You're just saying college football starts this weekend.
Right.
The Bears playing in not too long, September 5th.
Hawks are going to, I feel like the Hawks are going to be great. I think they're going to win every game this year because they got two top line goalies. That's an amazing thing. And they're going to put them in the net at the same time, I hear. So
that's
going to be
wild.
Interesting.
That'd be nice.
Didn't know they allow that.
You lose a player, but it's okay. What do you need? You don't need a right winger.
If you can't get through to the goal, I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't
Do you
matter.
Remember that, 24-game winning streak? Oh, that was so awesome.
I know. Point streaks, right? I mean, you're going to have point streaks like, I just feel it. I just feel it. And the White Sox next season, I mean, they're fun this season. There's no question about it. But next season, they are a true contender. And that's going to be, you know, especially when, you know, Luis Robert gets up here. My guy.
Your guy.
Yeah, we're going to the game tonight.
How is he your guy? Everyone's his guy.
Oh, shut up!
We fight about this every time we're at the
Your other guy, Connor Murphy, doing God's work today. He was out at the West Side Elementary, handed out school supplies.
No big deal. Connor Murphy.
Yep. He's, I mean, just giving and giving. What a good guy.
I think we should take Connor Murphy to the Sox game with us and put him up in the booth with that DJ.
You'd do great.
All right. Okay, here we go. Ready? This is important stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it would be really important stuff if everything worked. All right, here we go. Here we go. Let's do it again.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
There you go.
Three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Yes, I hear you.
Number five.
Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders has outlined his ideas to combat climate change.
Oh, because Inslee is out of the race now, the Washington governor, who was all about climate change. He's taken over.
As Inslee himself said, we had a good run. Right, Kev?
Had a good run.
All right. He announced a $16.3 trillion plan to take on what he considers to be a national emergency. He's been pushing Medicare for all, also put a great deal of emphasis on climate change now.
This is a crisis that calls out for strong international cooperation, and that is exactly the kind of leadership that I will provide as President of the United States. It is no secret that we must transition away from fossil fuel, period, end of discussion. We will ban fracking and mountaintop removal coal mining. We will immediately end all new and existing fossil fuel extraction on federal public lands.
Has he ever seen a Trump rally? I mean, this
why,
is
you're
the
just
exact
comparing them?
Opposite of what, you know, like at a Trump rally, it's like, we're going to have more fracking. We're going to frack human beings and liberals. Yeah!
He put a former coal lobbyist in charge of the EPA.
Right, exactly.
I mean, this is what happened.
and he's got thousands of people screaming, "Yay! Kill them all! Shoot them!" And then, and Bernie's got 12 people going, "Let's get rid of the top of the mountain coal mining." Not exactly.
I think people care about it.
Jay Inslee will tell you, not a winning subject.
We had a good run.
But you're right. That's exactly what he's doing here. He's did because he figures he can grab a couple extra tenths of a point.
0.2%
that Jay Inslee
had.
Yeah.
Every little bit counts.
If he gets 80% of the 0.2%, that means he'll be up by 1.6%, which will be good. He'll take that.
It's an important issue. I just think it ranks 0.16. Lower than a lot of the other issues when it comes to how people decide to vote.
Yeah, I don't think there are enough single issue environmental voters yet. It's funny. You'd think there would be, but there aren't. Not a great.
Meanwhile,
number,
the rainforest burns, but don't worry about it.
Okay. What am I supposed to do about it? What am I going to do?
Well, Bernie will do something about it. That's what he's trying to say.
He's getting the Pacific Northwest vote for sure. It's a huge thing. Huge thing over there. That's why I'm pretty sure that's why Inslee was really just pushing that the whole time.
Right. True. But that's Washington and Oregon aren't going to win you the.
Oh, I know.
California, Washington, Oregon aren't going to win the whole thing. I mean, look, Hillary got them all. Didn't do anything for her.
What they would like to say, though, very sincerely, is that they cannot travel to Washington or Portland, Oregon, because the time change affects my bowel movements.
Oh, my God.
Oh, gosh. Please. Oh, gee. Bro.
But they would like to maybe join them on the Skype.
All right. Thank you, Bernie.
How do you work this FaceTime thing?
Hold on, I'm working it now. This is like such a Michigasis thing. Hold on, I got it.
All right. Are we're moving along? Yeah, we're moving
along.
Let's do it. All right.
Good. Number four.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get another memo. I'm going to be called in again.
Why?
I can just feel it. I just can feel it. William Rivera, who is a process server, said he was harassed and arrested for trying to deliver a subpoena to the Cicero town president. The story began with a lawsuit filed by Jason Gonzalez, who unrelated to this, who tried but failed to unseat Mike Madigan. Let's just take you back through this. This is a guy who was running for state office, right, against Mike Madigan. And he claims that he Madigan
ran two Hispanic candidates against him because he was going to capture the Hispanic vote, which is a majority in his district.
Right. So in June of last year, an attorney for Gonzalez hired this process server to serve Larry Dominick, the town president, to subpoena him to testify in the Madigan case. Rivera, this is all a civil case, right? Mm-hmm. So Rivera looked for Dominick at a town hall and then three Cicero residences. Because, you know, if you're the town president, you got to have the White House of Cicero.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to have the Pink House of Cicero. And then, you know, whatever it is, you got to have three places.
Mm-hmm.
So then this happened.
You looked for him at Cicero Town Hall. Was he there?
No.
You looked at three houses. Did you find him?
No.
2 days later, you go to another house.
Yes.
And that's when you encountered the Cicero police.
Right.
They pulled you over.
Right. They searched me, the hands on top of the car, and he was talking, and then he told the other two officers, the one that stopped me, he said, take him, have him arrested. And I said, what are you having me arrested for? Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Is that really? You've been served to serve and protect.
The town, when you drive into the town of Cicero,
mm-hmm.
it's the town motto. Don't worry about it. Welcome to Cicero. Don't worry about it.
How crazy is that, though? This is law enforcement.
Right. So then they accuse this guy, the process server, of stealing a package from Larry Dominick's front yard.
One of his three houses.
Now, they not only did they accuse him of that, they held him in jail for a day and a half, and then eventually he was acquitted of this in a court. That he didn't steal a package.
He was just picking it up to look at the name to see if it was Larry Dominick's name.
Right. But here is the rub on this. They raided his home in Chicago.
What? The Cicero police went to Chicago.
That's according to WGN Investigates. This is Ben Bradley, of course, you're hearing here. Here's Ben Bradley talking to the town president, Larry Dominick.
Why'd he go to the wrong house and take a package? You see it all the time on the news. People are stealing packages. Just because he's a process server don't mean he's above the law.
Hey, you guys really take package theft seriously in Cicero.
We take everything serious. That's why our crime is so low lately.
Have a few problems in government that need to be looked into, it sounds like. You can't have, the town president is not above the law either, which is the issue.
That's a good point.
Here.
That's a good point. Wait, there's more.
You're honestly telling me seven cops arresting a process server,
it's not my
trying
department.
To serve the town president. No coincidence there?
None.
Your cops supposedly told him that the town president can't be served.
That's not true. That's not true at all. Yeah. Everyone knows that could be served.
You play no role in Mike Madigan's machine.
No, he's much more powerful than me. So, what do I have to do with it? He's a friend of mine, but I have nothing to do with Mike Madigan's machine. All he had to do is come to my house. I sit on the porch every night and smoke a cigar. So if he came to the right house, he would have got me.
The right house? You have three houses. Well, why wouldn't you find the town president in the president's, the city hall, right? You wouldn't find him there?
Even in Cicero, where you live is like the shell game.
It's
you're kind of moving it around.
House?
You got to go, which one is it? I always tell this story, and this is true. This is a number of years ago. I was with a Chicago politician. We were at a sporting event, and we're walking into our seats, and he's introducing me as we're walking to our seats to all these guys from Cicero. There was the town treasurer, and this is the chief of police, and this is the first deputy superintendent of police, and this is the top sergeant of police. And I turned to the guy, I go, well, what happens if crime breaks out in Cicero tonight? He goes, with these guys sitting here, crime can't break out in Cicero.
Oh, gosh.
She tells you everything you need to know about the town of Cicero.
Does. I think there's more to the story, and I'm sure Ben Bradley will, WGN TV will be on top of it.
Oh, God, It's unbelievable.
Brace yourselves, people.
The mayor. I mean, it's right. It's right out of an HBO miniseries.
Totally.
We should do that. Cicero.
Instead of The Sopranos?
Yeah.
Cicero's.
Cicero. Just a limited series. All right.
Still exists.
You're more powerful than me. What am I going to do? That's basically what I heard there.
Heard it too.
Of course you can serve me. I get served all the time. Restaurants, bars get served.
They locked the guy up.
For a day and a half. They locked the guy up in the Cicero jail while they raided his house. Because he's a process server. He's not going to come. He's not from around here, is he? Not going to vote for me.
And they found what they thought was in the package, Ben reported. And yet he had a receipt for the item in his own house that he had purchased it. The whole thing. It just...
All right.
Yeah, we know what's going on there.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on here. All right, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
For the second day in a row, an Illinois congressman calling for impeachment of the president.
And we've got the traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Get Real in the Morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV Morning News team. It's all weekdays, 4 to 10 in the morning from on WGN-TV.
All right, top 5 of 5 continues. I think we've worked our way to
number 3.
Matt Nagy was at training camp today, and he defended all of this kicker stuff that's going on.
Okay.
Because he got asked a lot of questions about
sure.
this.
People like, you know, concerned.
Doing the right thing, the wrong thing, why so much? Are we going to concentrate on the kicker? We're not going to concentrate on the kicker. Is the kicker that important? Why should you score more points and we don't have to worry about the kicker? Blah, 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 blah.
It's how do you respond to it? So yesterday, you know, he was, I think, 7 for 8. And after his miss, he came back and he made it. And, you know, it's in practice. It's not a game. But there's a lot of evidence out there with a lot of different kickers in the history. I'm not talking about the last 2 or 3 years. I'm talking about in the history that have come out and struggled early on and been Hall of Fame kickers and Pro Bowl kickers currently. So we keep that in mind. Remember what I told you before is it's really easy in Chicago as a head coach of Chicago Bears, as a fan of Chicago Bears, as the media of Chicago Bears, as a team of Chicago Bears, it's really easy for us to just destroy every missed kick. And I think we have to keep those things in a little bit of perspective and not get too crazy over a missed kick here or there.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Does that make you feel better?
Not in the least. Yes, we're going to get crazy about it because we got PTSD. We got KTSD.
Kicker
traumatic stress disorder.
Post-traumatic kicker disorder, probably.
Whatever.
PTKD.
Same. Thank you very much.
Sure. So, I just want us to remember that because I think we'll need to use that at some point again in the future.
Because we got it. I'm sorry that we have this stress reaction to it, but we do. We have a stress reaction. What are we going to do? What do you want me to do about it? I didn't make this up.
It's called double doinkitis.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I don't need to hear from you.
Packer fan.
Papa! Checking in at
number 2.
So earlier in the summer, Breaking Bad stars Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul had the internet going nuts when they were pictures of them hanging out together and on what appeared to be a set. But it turns out that the photos were to promote their new mezcal company. But now Bob Odenkirk, of course, who is Saul, right? He better, let's go.
Yes,
yes Saul. Mm-hmm. Says that, in fact, there may be an upcoming movie in the works.
I've heard so many different things about it, but I am excited about the Breaking Bad movie. I can't wait to see it. I don't know what people know or don't know.
Right.
I find it hard to believe you don't know it was shot. They did it. You know what I mean? Like, how is that a secret? But it is. They've done an amazing job of keeping it a secret.
So
what?
How is this possible, though? I mean, what? Bryan Cranston's got to be a prequel if he's in it, right? Or if it's a sequel, then the viewers of the fans of the original Breaking Bad, it's a little confusing to them.
Plus, how could it be a prequel? Because that's when he was just your average everyday teacher. Like, what? There would be no. I don't understand what a prequel could be to the whole story.
Maybe it's neither.
Maybe it's neither.
But what? They filmed a movie?
There you go.
A reminder for fans of the show, in the final episode, you never see him die.
That's true.
All right. Spoiler alert.
Number one.
All right. Our sonic genius, Brian Altimer, who composes this every day.
Every day.
Top five at five. Put some things in that are just for him. So here we go. Here's one of them. Foo Fighters frontman Dave Grohl surprised the crowd at the Hackney Moth Club in London, where he crashed the party and performed Foo Fighter jams with, I cannot believe this, Rick Astley.
Woo! Never gonna make you cry. Never gonna tell a lie. And hurt you. We've known each other.
No. I can't.
We can just really never escape that song.
No, we on the show cannot. I just want to say that we have all now been Rickrolled.
The top five at five.
Rokajo with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN Chicago, WGN everywhere, which means you can get us on your smart speakers, you can get us on TuneIn, you can get us on iHeart, you can find wherever you want to find us, you can find us on your computer. And the WGN app, we suggest
the
WGN app.
Very easy.
A very amazing thing for your phone, and then place for your car, through your headphones, or whatever it happens to be.
Great sound, very easy to access.
And sometimes when we get preempted by White Sox baseball, you'll be able to hear us there. We're continuing on. And let's just put it this way. Show is a little bit more off the chain, as the grandparents would say.
Right. Much to management's constant upset and worry about what's going on when we're on the stream. You've been called into the office on occasion.
I was called in last week to be told about the WGN brand and the importance of the WGN brand. Doesn't matter what the platform is, it's the brand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Classic meeting.
Classic management upset at me. Yeah. 32 years and counting. What did I have then?
You are having a good run.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, let's see.
Kind of like Inslee, the Washington governor, who just
bowed
out. But
he had a good run. Roe's still having a good run.
Yeah, but you know what? Who knows? For 32 years in this business, I have thought this was going to be my last day. Every day has been my last day.
What a lot of days you've had. Yeah. Amazing.
When it is, call me, and then I'll answer, and I'll say you had a good run, and I'll hang up.
Don't worry. You might be here for it. Oh, okay. You might just walk by the office and go, you had a good run.
You had a good run. See you,
as I'm walking out with my banker's box and my potted plant.
I thought it was the briefcase with the...
Rolling the Carnarvon wagon behind me.
Oh, no, don't take
today's
it.
The day, huh? You had a good run. See you.
Leave the Carnarvon wagon.
Leave the Carnarvon wagon.
Take the cannoli. All right, let's do this. This story, which really affects a lot of people on this program. Earlier this week, there was a story about how millennials are literally driving themselves nuts and bankrupting themselves. Literally bankrupting themselves because they have to go to so many weddings. And everybody now has to have a destination wedding, or there's a big gift that is expected. And then there's
bachelor parties.
Right.
That's true.
All of that stuff. That just being a friend can cost you thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Ain't it the truth?
Accurate.
Especially if you're standing up in the wedding. Yeah.
Forget about it.
Then you got to pay for what you're wearing. You got to, you have to be at like everything. And you sometimes have to throw one of the parties.
Mm-hmm. Throw the parties, shower gifts, engagement party gift, gift. There's a lot.
When I stepped in a wedding, we had a mother-in-law shower as well. Like the friends of the mothers we had to throw as a bridesmaid. That was one of our responsibilities.
Do you know what the average wedding gift is for a millennial?
How much?
Dollars per wedding compared to Gen Xers or baby boomers.
Oh, I wonder.
I have all three numbers.
100?
Yeah, 100 per plate is usually what I would think.
For a wedding gift is, the baby boomer spends $113. okay. For a wedding gift. The Gen Xer spends $124 for, on average, for the wedding gift. The Millennial, $151. This is an average.
Wow.
Is that
so
expected?
It's 40-something percent more than what the baby boomer is spending. Think about that for a second. That's pretty crazy.
I mean, I've always been taught, think about $100 per person. Like, for, to cover your
plate. Cover your plate, yeah. I mean, that cover your plate goes back to the, you know, goes back to the Last Supper. They were talking about that. You got to, hey, you got to cover your plate here.
Yeah, I think some of this stuff, it's like kind of gotten out of hand because a lot of, like, I couldn't, one of my buddies had his at like Lake Tahoe. I'm like, dude, I can't swing it. I'm sorry. You have fun without me. You know, I'm like, this is crazy. You
right,
know?
You got to pay for the plane ticket, pay for the hotel. Yeah, you still have to give a gift. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, my one of my best friends got married last year, and I was living in Oregon, and she had her bachelorette in Key West. So that was a cross-country flight right there, a few thousand dollars.
That's about as far as one can get from one place to another in the United States.
Yep. So that the gift for that, and then obviously I had to come back for the wedding here.
So what's the total out the packet right there?
For like the entire
out the whole deal.
Probably $3,500.
And what? And how good of a friend is this?
One of my best friends.
Not anymore.
And I didn't even go to the shower or anything like that because I couldn't go to everything. There was no way.
$3,500 on that.
That's
the
crazy.
Average wedding costs $33,000 now. That's up $5,000 since 2013.
Well, millennials are the first generation you keep reading about taking out loans for their weddings. Because of they have the student debt and they have the other, you know, already sort of have, you know, payments that they have to make, but then they don't have that kind of a savings.
That's just getting the marriage off to a wrong direction.
Yeah. A stressful start.
Right.
True.
And these bachelorette parties and bachelor parties, I'm like, look, guys, it's going to be the same result. We're all going to get drunk and we're going to regret everything we do, no matter where we go. We go to Wisconsin Dells, we're going to go to Vegas, same result. Someone's going to do something stupid. We're going to party for 2 days straight, maybe three if we get nuts. It's going to be the same result. I mean, it's fun to go do it and all that if you can. Everybody can swing it. But I don't know. I've been to bachelor parties at the Dells, multiple in the Dells. I've been to the one in Vegas was pretty insane. That was awesome. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's basically the same thing.
No, you're right. But at the same time, if you are the person getting married, why not use that as an excuse to go on a pretty cool vacation? And then you weed out a lot of people.
Because everything you just said, I'm not going to stick my friends. Hey, guys, we're going to Vegas. We're staying here. We're staying there. Well, it's going to cost you $2,000 or $3,000.
As long as you don't assume that they're just going to go. I mean, I think you want to expect that.
I mean,
a lot
I don't need an
won't.
Excuse to make a trip just by getting engaged. You know
hey, you two. Oh, all right. Easy. I think the issue, though, is like the destination wedding. Is that what you're talking about?
I was talking more about the bachelor party and bachelorette party, but I think it's kind of it's a lot because I've heard of people having to go to a crazy like bachelorette party or bachelor party, and then it's also a destination wedding.
Ooh, that's a
really
lot of money.
Like that's pretty. That's
so
nuts.
This in the story, a destination bachelorette party in New York City. They did an average here. If you did that in New York City. 3 day weekend, call it. Going in on Friday, come out on Sunday.
Okay.
$2,000.
Trying to make it out alive.
Right. So it's like, and just think about that. You know, that is a ton of dough if you're in a job that's paying, you know, whatever the, I mean,
a ton of dough no matter what for a weekend.
Right. I mean, how close are you? I'm a firm believer in this. You know, having paid for a few weddings in my day, just a few. Well, my daughters. Let's go with my daughters. It's like, you know, and a lot of parents do this too. They're like, hey, you know, you can take this money and you can do whatever you want with it, right? Or you can use it in the wedding. And that, by the way, you never want to, if your kid is the daughter, you never want to say that. These are just things that are very hard to hear. Because everybody's got like, especially since Instagram,
right?
Everybody
that changed everything.
Has like wedding. I gotta outdo you.
Well, you have to have these Instagram worthy venues, right? And so people want to take pictures everywhere.
It's probably always been like that, right? One uppers, but now it's so front and center. that you see so many of the, everybody's wedding pictures.
And
so,
my
yeah.
my kids were totally cool about it. I mean, they were they went all right because they had been to like these crazy. They had just come back from a wedding in Lake Como. I mean, imagine what that costs you, right? Jeez. And I'm like, how old did you know these people? Yeah, I don't know.
Met them a few times. What?
I'm like, how did you do that? Eh, I don't know. They wanted to see what was, you know, I mean, if you get invited to something, it's a good opportunity because then they get to travel for, they made that into a vacation, right? But still, it's like, you know, that's ridiculous. And who the hell's doing that? Like, everybody, come on over. I mean, who can afford that?
Right. Well, I wonder, it's interesting, too, because you said that you paid for your daughter's wedding. It seems like now millennials, they split it, don't you?
You paid for my college instead.
But, I mean,
you had an option?
It's not the
college or
bride,
wedding?
Pretty much.
That's as well. Let's see, now look at her responsible.
We did, but
we
didn't.
Expect no less out of her.
Well, right. It's, you know, we're going to pay for you to have an education and whichever education you want. That way you can take care of yourself. You don't need a man to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that one coming. Listen, I want to say that I did split some of it, but it's still a significant.
I'm saying even 20 years ago, it was pretty common, wasn't it, that the parents of the bride might pay for it more often than the parents of the groom.
There was some splittage there, and you pick up different pieces of it. Still a gigantic number.
It is.
Yeah. I don't really know why that even started. Why is it fair that only one side is paying?
I think it's...
Oh, it's for the most sexist of reasons.
Yes.
I mean, think
Which
about it.
Which is why it's going away.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the whole dowry thing and, you know, offering the bride up, the father offering the bride, you know, that whole... I mean, think about all that, right? I mean,
if anything, it should be like, hey, you're getting this for the rest of your life. What are you going to give me?
Well, there was that, too. But I think in other cultures, and I think that's kind of seen as a little bit of, you know, that doesn't seem right. Like, how much for the little girl? You know, that's not so much. Yeah. That's not so good. Right? So, I don't know. How did this get dark? We were in the middle of it. We're just complaining about our friends who are dragging us into going places we don't necessarily want to go. That's the point. Thank you very much.
God, I had a stretch of like 20 weddings in 2 years.
I remember
years.
That.
It was insane.
You were constantly going to a wedding.
That
had to drive you into like
yes,
some
every
serious
weekend.
Financial difficulties too, though.
Totally like, ruined my golf game that summer too. They're like, we got to go to the church. They're like, oh, can I get quick 8, maybe a quick 9-inch? No, no.
And by the way, to attend a bachelor or bachelorette party, the average guest spends $537 to attend that.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Think about that.
And a lot of your friends get married around the same time, too. It's same sort of window, 2-year, 3-year window. Mm-hmm. It can happen. I mean, you get several friends, and it totally adds up.
So, like, if you're going to do, like, that party bus, let's say it's not, like, a destination thing, but it's a here deal. Like, you're going to do the party bus, and you're going to go up and you're going to the West Loop, or you're going to go to, you know, the Lincoln Park bars or something, whatever it is. Right? And there's going to be the one girl who's wearing the, you know, the necklace of penises and the, you know, the rest
Becca.
Of everything. Yeah.
Becca's
the sash.
The sash. And then, you know, the whatever it is. That,
right.
You know,
I used to live
on.
Across the street from the place where the bachelorette party buses would dump out people to go to a certain club. I had to move. It was honestly one of the most troubling / intriguing times of my life.
Yeah.
Because I guess they use like the big dumpsters out there would often get like played like musical instruments in certain points of the evening, and there'd be lots of loud conversations that really sound like
Where's Becca?
Exactly. Sound much like the playpen conversations that we talked about the other day.
This is Becca on land is what this is.
She was shucking a White Claw in the back of the bus and I can't find her.
Anybody seen her?
She's in back of the dumpster. Okay. Somebody hold her head. Hold her head. Okay.
I got her shoes.
All right.
Why is she not wearing shoes?
The heels always come off.
I saw the other night. I saw this like moving it like they moving like a school of fish down the street.
Mm-hmm.
These girls in a bachelor party pursuit, and it was like, and it is funny because they're and it wasn't even like fully sunset, and they're stumbling down the street. I mean, the thing had just started, I'm assuming, right? You know,
right.
And you know, they're wearing all kinds of genitalia paraphernalia, you know? The shirts, outrageous. I mean, just imagine this. This is like, and what's the craziest thing? There was an adult in there. There was like a mother. I almost looked like a grandmother, but there was a mother of somebody in that group. And she's wearing a gigantic phallus around her neck, the girl.
See, I found it better to just post up at a destination. Because you go out, you start hitting bars, you start losing people like flies. Rent a house near the Dells. That's my sure go-to bed.
All right, there we go. I just want to know, who was the mom?
That's becoming more popular.
Yeah,
like having
parents do that more often. Yeah, parents, I've been to bachelor parties with dads there.
Yeah, aunts and uncles. I
went to I went to like the night before the wedding party with my son-in-law. But it became very apparent very quickly that I was to get the hell out. I was to arrive at the, because there was the, you know, the pre, you know, the rehearsal dinner,
mm-hmm.
right? That was beautiful. That was great. Then there was the, like, the party where everybody goes back to the suite, and all the guys go back to the suite, you know, let's have a cigar, let's have this, let's have that. And then I realized, I gotta go before anything else happens that I don't want to know about.
See, that's dangerous, the night before.
Yeah. And I'm like, I got a thing. And then, I don't want to see anything about the bachelorette stuff at all. I didn't want to, you know.
As the father of the bride.
Yes. All right. Let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Governor Pritzker signed a bill to help end the teacher shortage in Illinois.
Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper Reviews, brought to you by Architect. He is here. Architect of Chicagoland, our dear friends. And there's Rich right there.
I'm right here.
Yes, he's right there.
He's right there.
It's my fault. My fault. All right.
They have a childproof cap on my microphone here, so Ro has to, he's the only one that has the console.
I got it. Wait, turn to the left.
He's to turn the key the same time somewhere else turns the key the other way. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
All right. What do you want to talk about?
Let's get into Ready or Not, which is one of those little late summer films that's picking up a lot of momentum. It's in theaters starting, you know, basically tonight. Getting a lot of acclaim, great reviews, and great word of mouth from the advance screenings of it. This movie stars Samara Weaving. She's an Australian actress, and a real up-and-comer, as we like to say. And she's in the classic Jamie Lee Curtis horror movie heroine role. But the mm-hmm. horror movie takes place on her wedding night. She marries into this family who have made a fortune in the gaming world. In the 19th century, they printed playing cards and then board games. And now they're so successful that they even own sports franchises. Very eccentric family. And now, on her wedding night, at the giant mansion the family lives in, she has to draw a card. And they all have to play a game. This is on her wedding night, right after the wedding. She's still got the gown on. Now, if you draw an innocuous game like checkers or chess, you just play a game with the family and that's it. But if you draw the hide-and-seek card, when you are when you hide and they're seeking you, they're seeking to end you because they believe they have to do a ritual sacrifice of the bride to appease the family curse. That's the setup of Ready or Not. And we got a little clip right here. This is Samara Weaving. She's the bride who now realizes they all want to kill her. And I believe this is her brother-in-law, Adam Brody. Remember, he was in one of those TV shows back in the day. A good young actor.
The O.C.
The O.C. Thanks. Thank you, Lauren. He's the brother-in-law that the weak alcoholic brother-in-law who kind of likes her, but, you know, is still kind of beholden to the family curse.
I just came to get a drink. I have to call the others.
No, you don't. No. You can help me, please.
This doesn't end well for you. I just don't want to be the one to serve you up.
Daniel, I'm begging you.
I'm really sorry about all this. It's true what they say. The rich really are different. I'll give you a 10-second head start.
Daniel.
1,000. 2,000. 2.5. 1,000.
She's in the study!
And there we go. One of the things I like about this movie, you mentioned that you heard them mention they're the 1%. This family, you know, the family patriarch's kind of a buffoon with a beautiful, classy wife. and he's got two sons who are kind of, you know, ne'er-do-wells, but think they're really smart. Hmm. And his money came from kind of a dubious source that might remind you a little bit of a certain American family that thinks it's royalty right now. And then we have our good old regular person who is running away from them. And by the way, they're using all sorts of 19th century weapons like hatchets and crossbows and stuff to try to kill her. And then when she gets her pieces of revenge, it's kind of fun and very, very, very bloody and really disgusting and really funny.
You said horror/comedy.
Yes, absolutely.
Is it funny?
It's very funny, but it's funny in the kind of way where someone's like, you know, pointing the crossbow in the wrong direction and somebody walks into the room at the wrong time and whoops, and all of a sudden that person has it sticking out the back of their throat.
Does this take place in the modern day?
It does. It takes place in modern time.
But his family's been making money for 120 years.
Yeah, they believe there's a family curse if they don't offer a human sacrifice on the wedding night. They will all die at dawn, and it's almost all shot in this huge mansion, very Shining style. In fact, there's an homage to Shining, among other movies, in this movie. So it's really clever, really bloody. I mean, man, you would not believe, you know, the wedding dress, the Samara Weaving, the actress, she had 30 different bridal gowns she had to wear in this because there's so much blood and guts and goo on her. And she wears yellow Chuck Taylors to move around quickly. Because you know how brides like to do that underneath the wedding gown?
Mm-hmm.
Put on the comfortable shoes. Mm-hmm. 3.5 stars. It's really, I think, going to get, it's going to be a kind of surprise hit at the box office. And I think it's, the last I checked, it was 100% at Rotten Tomatoes. Because it's really, taking the critics by surprise. And Samara Weaving is going to be a big star. She's, I want to say, in her late 20s. She's done a couple of small roles in big films. Her uncle is Hugo Weaving from The Lord of the Rings. And he was the guy that kept saying, Mr. Anderson, in the Matrix movies. So she comes from Australian acting royalty.
Oh, interesting. They apparently, they don't have a human sacrifice thing in their family. So
no.
That's good. It's royalty. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, and what did you say Star Wars?
3.5 for Ready or Not. Like, Ready or Not,
and
here I come.
In the theaters, it's not going to just be on your TV.
It's in your you really want to see it in theaters with the crowd. I would say don't get, like, the nachos slathered with, like, sauce and stuff.
Okay.
Because you'll put those down about halfway through.
Okay.
Who knew they could explode like that?
Oh, God. All right. Okay. Let's see. Now, I've been seeing the commercial for this. The Peanut Butter Falcon. I don't understand the title.
Well, you know, that's the thing. When you come up with a title like that, you got a popular food spread and a bird of prey. How do you put those two together? You better have a quirky movie that lives up to it. And I do like this. I'm giving 3 stars to The Peanut Butter Falcon. Shia LaBeouf. You know, you've heard of the Shia LaBeouf.
We have.
It's kind of amazing.
He ruined my Walgreens.
He ruined your Walgreens. You know, it's kind of amazing he's only 33. When you think of all he's been through. You know, the Transformers franchises. He did
the Indiana Jones thing,
various TV shows, and then, you know, Wrestling in the Walgreens, performance art, ups and downs. But he's a really good actor. He plays a Coastal Carolina, I guess they call it, fisherman who's in a lot of trouble because he's stealing lobster traps and stuff like that and burning down the rivals' cages. So he's on the run, and he runs into a kid with Down syndrome, young man with Down syndrome, who has just escaped from an old folks home he's been put in because there's no other place for him to go because of, you know, shortage of funds and that stuff. And this guy wants to become a professional wrestler known as the Peanut Butter Falcon. And that's how he becomes the thing, because the kid puts some peanut butter on his face at one point and kind of moves around like a falcon. It's basically Huckleberry Finn. In fact, they keep talking about Mark Twain in the movie. They even build a raft at one point to sail down the Carolina coast and make their way to the site of the wrestling camp. That they want to go and get this young guy too. So it's just a fun buddy movie. The young actor, I think it's Zach Ekstrom, who plays the young man with Down syndrome, actually has Down syndrome, and it's a terrific performance. And then Dakota Johnson shows up from 50 Shades of Grey as Eleanor, the saintly social worker who joins them on their quest.
Can somebody get me out of these handcuffs?
Yeah. You know that? It's funny you mention that, because there's a scene in the movie where you think about that. She can get them out of those cuffs. they don't make a winking reference to that. She's very sweet in this. She's a good actress. So 3 stars. It's a very heartwarming adventure. This is one that people of all ages can enjoy, have a good time with. Very whimsical, not at all based in reality. It's the story of the Peanut Butter Falcon.
All right. Oh, 3 stars, you said.
Yeah, 3 stars for that.
All right. And on the other side, After the Wedding, which is funny because we were just talking about
you
this.
Were. Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of after the wedding, the bills come in.
Yeah.
But that's not what this movie is about.
No, but it kind of ties in with some of the stuff you were talking about.
Oh. All right.
All right.
All right. All right. Did anybody move? Let's find out from Kim what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Could the end of those annoying robocalls be near? We'll give you the details coming up.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago 10:30 p.m. on WGM-TV.
Okay. All right, Mr. Richard Roper is here, brought to us by Architect. And let's talk about this After the Wedding movie. We were just talking about how expensive weddings are to go to for the kids, for the millennials.
Well, you know, we're just talking about, you know, Peanut Butter Falcon, a creative title. After the Wedding is one of those movies that you feel like you, did I already see something called After the Wedding or Wedding Bell Blues or Before the Wedding? The Wedding Came Later. Yeah, this is a, you know, it's got a great cast. Julianne Moore, one of the best actresses in the world. She plays a New York marketing brand expert. You know, like they always have these jobs in the movies where somebody knows how to, you know, give something, you know, brand a product, market something, and they always have like 900 people working in their offices and they all look like supermodels, male and female, and she has an office that would probably cost like $100 million in New York City. But she's very successful. She's got a big giant house. Now in the meantime, Michelle Williams, another terrific actress, she's Isabel, the saintly woman who has devoted her life to running an orphanage in Calcutta. So there's your contrast, right? We got the super rich lady in New York and the saint in Calcutta running the orphanage, and the woman in Calcutta, Isabel, she gets word that there's a mysterious benefactor who wants to give $2 million to the orphanage. Ooh. But the catch is that Isabel has to come to New York and make her pitch directly to the Julianne Moore character. You won't be surprised to find out there might be more to the story than that. There may be a hidden motive for Teresa, the rich woman, to bring Isabel back to New York City. Her daughter, Julianne Moore's daughter, is about to get married. She invites Isabel to the wedding, even though she's never met anybody in the family, at their giant estate. And that's when Isabel realizes that that 22-year-old who's about to get married is, in fact, the daughter she gave up for adoption some 20 years ago.
Oh, no!
And I'm giving you that spoiler because I don't want you to see this movie, because then after that, there are even weirder and more arbitrary turns and twists. And Billy Crudup, who's a terrific actor, just last week he was stuck married to Kate Blanchett, who was going bonkers in Where'd You Go, Bernadette. Now he's stuck married to Teresa, the brand executive, who brings in Isabel out of nowhere. Because he's the one that had the affair with Isabel 21 years ago.
Oh, no.
So it's a soap opera. And I'm telling you, that's only one of the twists in there that are completely ridiculous. It's a great-looking film. They keep hitting us over the head with the fact that saintly orphanage manager woman, super rich, you know, flinty New York exec. What different worlds they live in. How can they come together? I don't care. Two stars. Very disappointing. It's a remake of a film from like 2006, I think, a Danish film that was better.
Oh. Well, that's I think we're going to have to bomb them, right? Are we in the middle
of
them
or bomb
Greenland
them?
Right away. And
yeah,
then
we're
going to
take that away. Sorry. We're very sorry, Danes. But we have to do this. The president says so.
Is Curaçao in play? They got a good little league team. Maybe Trump can buy them.
That's interesting, because it's kind of a fascinating concept.
It is kind of. You had me in the beginning with the way you described
well,
it.
Well, and Isabel, the woman who runs the orphanage, she was under the impression that the baby had been given up for adoption to strangers. But in fact, when she left for Calcutta, her lover at the time grabbed the baby at the last second and then met Julianne Moore and they raised it. But they've never told this 22-year-old woman that she actually, they just think that she just thinks that she was adopted from like from an orphanage, going back to the orphanage type of situation or a foster home. But in reality, he's the biological father. She never knew all of this until just now. What a terrible thing
this
for a mother.
When he was in Stillwater, probably.
It would
right?
have been
from
that,
about 20 years ago.
Young groupie. And you know, one of the big problems here is okay, the Julianne Moore character, she wants to bring Isabel here because she wants, you know, the truth to come out and let her know that her grown daughter has actually been raised by Julianne Moore. But what a cruel thing to bring her there on her daughter's wedding day to everyone involved. Because the daughter doesn't know. Daughter thinks her mom died, like in childbirth.
Oh, God.
That's not the time
Here's
to tell
mother.
The husband has no idea that the biological mom, the actual mother, the birth mother, is coming in. And the birth mother from Calcutta has no idea she's being brought back into this soap opera. She's going to meet her daughter for the first time. So it's a horrible thing for the brand management expert woman to do.
It sounds like a Maury Povich show.
So yeah, about rich people that do this stuff. So it's really disappointing. Very well acted, but no.
Okay.
So stay away from After the Wedding.
All right.
No gifts, please.
Okay. What do you get? Yeah. Now
there's my pull quote for the if the pub studio wants something. Richard Roper says, no gifts, please. RSVP, no.
Don't fly out of town for this one.
Right now, caller number 19, 312-981-7200, which rips us off for a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Oilers on Monday, October 14th. Single game tickets on sale right now. Over 20 game day giveaways, 5 2010 anniversary celebrations, 3 alternate jersey nights, retro hat series. You got community nights, theme ticket offers, everything you could possibly want. Go to Blackhawks.com. Choose the game you like. Choose the event you like. Choose when you're walking in the door, what you're going to get. If they got Gravy Boat Night,
oh, go.
Get that.
I don't think they do this year. Sell
out Gravy Boat Night. They don't have it this year? That was the best thing ever.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm. They've got a Duncan Keith dental related night.
Yes, they got like a floss holder.
A floss holder.
Right, which I'm thinking, who needs a floss holder?
Well, you didn't
holder?
Know you needed a gravy boat either, and then you did.
Well, yeah, but I mean, who can, it was right before the holidays. Who couldn't use a gravy boat?
You already had one probably, but this is better.
Always an issue making sure that gravy didn't get kind of lukewarm by the time it gets passed around that long table.
Putting it on a Zamboni and have all the kids in the family move it around constantly. Here you go. More gravy.
Who knew the gravy could be a toy? Anyway, go to Blackhawks.com. That's what you need to do. Go to Blackhawks.com and choose your night and buy the tickets or just a bunch of them. I'm telling you, they are going to be great this season. I can promise you that. They got 2 goalies. It's like having a walrus in goal. That's how good they are. No sleepies, Duncan. No sleepies. All right. Thank you very much, Richard Roper.
Sure.